Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
Man, the finals are something else. And the three geniuses here did not think we would be where we are. We're just going to get that disclaimer out off the top. Welcome to the Ryan Goodman Tangway Along for the Ride podcast as we talk about the NBA. Of course, we're talking about the Celtics and the Warriors. Bob's got something to say about Quinn Snyder, too, what's going on in Utah that's coming up. But first, I have to tell you that our partners at Better Online or Bet Online, or maybe they should call it Better Online, but Bet Online is the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info, latest odds, news, sports developments, of course, the finals, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline, your source for your favorite Vegas casino games. So easy to get started. Just go to the website, sign up today, use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first episode. BetOnline, where the game starts. I'm going to start with this right off the top. I'm going to go to our senior member because he has seen it all. He was there when the game was invented in Springfield. Bob Ryan, to me, this was the best game for this Celtic group to this point. Game three.
It was a necessary statement that they get it, that they understand what got them in trouble in the two games, which includes the game one, you know, which they salvaged with a miraculous fourth quarter, but still they had transgressions to leading up to that. The turnover thing, they cut it down. They had 12. They're still for 19 points, but that's a lot better than 33 points they give up in turnovers the game before. There were a couple of lapses, but it was better. I just think they responded. They didn't worry about Draymond Green, you know, and
right.
They didn't worry about him. And we kind of wondered how he would present himself in this game. He wasn't as crazy as he was in the second game. Anyway, I look at this whole thing in general. I mean, this is a final exam. They passed all the other increments on the way. This group hasn't done it before. They have to prove that they can do it, that they can master what all the things it takes in order to become a champion and to win a 7-game series when it's the culmination of the season. And I'm very encouraged. I'm not crazy. I'm not giddy. It ain't over. But I'm very encouraged. I thought that was a very encouraging performance.
Yeah, and Jeff, if I may interject, but what I want to elaborate on, my point is, this team could take a punch. I mean, my God, they can take a punch. I mean, they were terrible in game two. And
I don't know if that's taking a punch, though. I feel like that's more inconsistency than necessarily taking a punch.
Okay, let me just say this, though, and I'm going to let you do your thing.
Yeah.
It's their way, though. I get it. I understand what you're saying. I understand it. But last night, they're up 18, and Golden State comes back. They take the lead, and I go, here we go. And they took the punch again. I mean, it's just what they do. I've never seen a team look so bad and so good at the same time.
They just, you know, they're not one of these dominant NBA teams. Right. Like they're just not. And there is no team like that out there right now. It's not Golden State from a few years ago. It's not, you know, the old Celtics teams with Bird, McHale and Parrish. This is a good team that, again, is still finding its way, but obviously is good enough to compete and maybe win an NBA title right now. The thing they had last night was everybody played well, where game two, everybody played like garbage. I mean, seriously, you couldn't find a guy who played well in game two for the Celtics, and you couldn't find a guy who didn't play well in game three. And a lot of that, I felt like, was home cooking there. They, you know, the crowd, and I know they hadn't had a major home court advantage, but I felt like last night was critical with that, with a lot of the guys that needed to have bounce back games. Marcus Smart being one. Jaylen Brown came out of the gates unbelievable, and they needed that. They needed to come out strong, which they did, but it was everybody. Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, Derek White was good again. But the key for me, and I said it going in, was Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to know the numbers. We could all, you know, put in the time to do it, but how many games they lose when he plays anywhere near to that level ever when he plays that way, they generally win. And he was a wonderful two-way player last night. Absolutely. Here's what I loved about I felt best about the game. When Golden State made the run, which included the bizarre 7-point possession, which I, you know, how many times she's down, you know, bizarre 7-point possession. They answered immediately. That was the only lead Golden State had. They had two leads all night, 2-0 in 83-82. And that was the only lead they had in the second half. They answered immediately. I think Smart hit a three. Well, I'm not sure.
He did. Yeah.
And they, next thing you know, it's up to 8, it's 9, 11. And then the fourth quarter was maintenance. Fourth quarter was simply maintenance. You know, keep them at arm's length. And then eventually we're going to watch the Luke Cornett show, you know. And so
doesn't it?
Oh, that's what I like. The response when Golden State came back was really encouraging.
Doesn't it just look like now when you look at it on the court, first of all, the Celtics look bigger, stronger, more athletic, younger, all of it. But like you look at it now and you're almost like, how is Golden State going to win this series? That's kind of what I think of right now.
Right.
Unless Steph goes for 40 and Klay goes for 20. And again, I've said this over and over to you guys. I don't trust Andrew Wiggins. I don't trust him. I didn't like his stat line always looks better than how he plays to me. His stat line is never indicative of Andrew. Like I thought he played like garbage last night. And you look at it, he's still at 18 points. He had 7 rebounds. But to me, he's got to step up and be the number two guy when I don't think he's capable of doing that for a championship team.
The following is not a parochial observation. The following is the observation of looking and watching how this thing has unfolded from the time they threw the ball up in game one. The only way the Golden State Warriors are going to win this series is if the Boston Celtics have beaten themselves.
Right.
Boston Celtics, as you outlined, Jeff, have much more going for them. And the only way they're going to lose this series is if they screw themselves up. And that's why I liked last night. That one of the things I had to prove was, oh, by the way, we can win an important game at home. That was the thing.
True.
And they, you know, because they've had these great crowds. You can't say they haven't been supported. The crowds have been as good as you could ever ask in the history of this particular building, which includes, you know, the 08 team. The crowds have been terrific. The crowds are doing their job. You know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. And the team has not been rewarding them often enough. But last night they did reward them. And as I said, they rewarded them with a pretty good start to finish performance. And when they had their little slip up, they said, okay, let's go. Boom. And they go right back. And they won the game twice. I always call that re-winning. They re-won the game. And they did it. They re-won the game with, well, you know, with efficiency, ease. I mean, so they are better. But if they just don't do stupid things, they're going to win this series.
See, when you say they are better, we feel that way now. And I've been hearing that in various places. The Celtics are better and better. If Klay Thompson, and he kind of got hot last night.
Oh, he did get hot.
Yeah, I mean,
He was bad early.
But if he finds his way and all of a sudden becomes Klay Thompson, are the Celtics better?
Well, he was Klay Thompson last night after that start. And there's one particular play, the one transition shot. They can survive because they have other assets that the Warriors can't. Here's my worry. One worry, that the thing that can change everything for me and change the whole prognosis, it's Robert Williams. When Robert Williams is out there and doing what he does, they have no answer. And this guy may held the world's record for most distance covered blocking a shot. I mean, I'm not lying. This is Russell-like. I remember when Tommy Heinsohn was going crazy calling Greg Steenstra. You know, remember that?
Yes, I do.
And we all laughed.
I was there.
All right, we all laughed, you know. But I'm here to say that I have not since Russell seen a Boston Celtic player that can make the type of blocks that Robert Williams is making. And and alterations that Robert Williams is making. We know he's not 100%. We know that this is a nurturing thing, that calibration thing, that Amy has to be very careful how he uses him. And every time something happens, you pray. Remember, there was a moment last night when we thought maybe he hurt himself. But if he's playing, if he's out there to give him 20 to 25 minutes, they're going to win, period.
Well, here, and Jaylen's been better than Clay. Like Tatum and Steph, you don't have to win that matchup, no, right? You just can't lose it significantly.
Yeah.
Jaylen's clearly been much better than Clay on both ends. And the other thing here is you've got Marcus Smart and Draymond Green that are similar in a lot of ways, right? Their toughness, their DNA, their defense. Here's the difference. Marcus Smart can give you something. He's an offensive threat. Draymond is not an offensive threat. I put out a stat this morning. Draymond shot 39% from three his senior year at Michigan State. Like, people forget that. He could shoot.
I remember.
He averaged 16 points a game. He was an offensive threat then. I feel like it's almost been a disservice to Draymond having Steph. It helped him get in the league and stay in the league and thrive in the league defensively, but it stunted his, I don't know, growth is the right word. He's just regressed offensively because he's played with those guys and accepted his role. And instead of being a factor offensively like Marcus Smart has done, he's a complete non-factor.
No. And he's older too. And he plays so hard. You know, this little tread off the tires, I think, you know, the factor. Not
all. They're older.
Yeah.
They're all older.
And he leaves it all on the floor. He doesn't leave anything out. You know, he gives you what he gives. You know, so anyway, I by the way, just in general terms, I love having him in the mix. It's fun to have a villain in the mix. It is.
Needed. I mean, even Draymond is not really hateable. He's only hateable if you're a Celtic fan.
Right. Right.
Oh no! Why you think the other he doesn't do this to every other team in the league?
He does. He does, but I don't. I mean, listen, I'm a Celtic fan, but I still kind of like him, Bob. You know what I mean?
Oh, I
mean, I like
him. Mind having him on my. I there are a few guys in the last 10 years or 12 years that I really identified in college, and I really liked them, and he's one of them. Honestly, I know this is not revisionist history. I identified him at Michigan State. I liked him a lot, and I
Lambeer. Lambeer, I hated. And unfortunately, when I met him, he was a nice guy.
Well, that'll spoil everything.
I'm like, geez, Bill, you're a nice guy, you know? I mean, he was talking to us when, you know, during one of the playoff series with the Pistons and Celtics. I go, damn. But like Draymond, he frustrates me, but I don't dislike him. That's just me.
The thing about him is he can hurt you. And you got to, you know, he can hurt you. And of course, Marcus can hurt you. As Steph Curry knows, Marcus can hurt you too. Because they throw their bodies around. And they're good bodies. And they can hurt you. You know, that's the only thing about it.
But one thing I want to get out of the way is the Draymond factor in game two. We haven't had a chance to talk about that. I was just talking to our friend Cedric Maxwell. And, you know, the whole thing between Max and Draymond, which on CLNS Media, this website you're watching, you could certainly catch up on the two jousting. And I said, OK, this is great theater, but this is kind of the sidebar. This is the TMZ stuff that is great for the league. It's great for the league. It's great for the game. It doesn't really have anything to do with the nuts and bolts of the game. So, Jeff, I'll start with you on this one. Draymond Green in game two was not the reason the Celtics lost.
No. I mean, listen, Draymond Green certainly trying to get in the heads of these young guys, right? That really are pretty even keel. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, Grant Williams likes to talk a lot. But I think Draymond might realize that's what he needs to do to win this series, to try to fluster him, to try to get him off their game a little bit. Maybe he honestly looking in says to himself, you know what? I'm not sure we can win otherwise. This is what I got to bring to the table. In addition to my defense, I got to play some mind games with these guys and that'll give us an edge. Listen, give them credit. Do whatever you got to do, Draymond. Just don't get kicked out of the game.
That was a masterclass in envelope pushing. And he pushed the envelope right off the table and wasn't held accountable. And he knew what he was doing. He even, am I correct that he actually addressed it publicly that he knew he had the technical, but he wasn't going to get thrown out of the game short of something egregious hurting somebody. He wasn't going to get thrown out of the game because they're not going to toss an important player in a playoff game without a damn good reason. And he didn't give him quite enough reason to do that. He knew it. All right. Now, that said, going into game three, what was the dialogue? Oh, we got Scott Foster coming in to be the sheriff, you know, to make sure he's not going to be able to do that again. That's it. That's as far as he's going to go. And it didn't even begin to go close to where they're for whatever reason. Let's watch and see whoever reads game four and how he plays game four. But no, he knows what he's doing. You're 100% right. He identified that I got to do this. This is going to enhance our chances of winning. No one else can do this the way I can do it. But he knew, and that he did push that envelope, of course. And he was he had the situation sized up accurately. They weren't going to blow him out.
If you're him, you're saying like, I don't know how these young dudes, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, are going to react. Let me give this a shot and see if I can get them rattled a little bit. And again, like, you know,
well,
we'll see. We'll see how it works. Draymond's got to focus sometimes on Draymond too. And sometimes he kind of, you know, let's clear of like what's important now, Draymond. To me, you got to be more productive with what you do. And sometimes I think he's thinking too much of how he can instigate, how he can get into the heads of some of these, you know, the opponents, rather than worried about his own game.
Now, I found it very interesting the way Grant Williams stood up to him. And Grant Williams, I think he's fascinated by the whole thing. And he's, I'm not going to take that crap. I'm going to show the world.
Right.
You know? And you got to be careful. Yeah, interesting. He's a tough kid. Smart. We know he's a smart guy. And he's a tough guy. He doesn't want to be Draymond Green per se. But, you know, I mean, he's not going to be that kind of guy as a player. But he wants to show the world I'm not going to be pushed around by Draymond Green. Literally, physically, I'm not going to get pushed around. I'm pushing back.
Here's the thing. Who else does Draymond have to back him up? Like, look at this team. Look at the Golden State Warriors team and how unintimidating they are, right? Like, Steph Curry, you're not scared of Steph. Klay, the nicest dude in the world. Andrew Wiggins, like, the nicest, quietest, like, non-confrontational kid ever. So, like, Draymond's out there on an island. Kevon Looney, he's big, he's strong, but he doesn't say two words. They don't have anybody. They don't have anybody.
No. I something occurred to me, guys, yesterday, and that is an analogy. Now, they're a finesse team other than him. They are the finesse team in the league with experience in terms of expertise other than him. It reminded me back in the day and of the 60s and 70s, the Canadiens, les habitants, they were beautiful skaters and finesse. One resident enforcer, John Ferguson. And I'm thinking, is there an analogy here between what John Ferguson stood out as the one, you know, a guy for them at that time, although I'm not sure where he overlapped with Chris Nylon, you know, but anyway, but Ferguson, that analogy just jumped out at me. But he is you're right. You're so right. He is their resident aggressor.
6'6", and he's 6'6". Like, you see him trying to rebound and defend Robert Williams.
Yeah.
And that's where I keep thinking back to, like, if they had James Wiseman, if they had James Wiseman.
That'd be
7-1. Like, he could be Robert Williams. That's who James Wiseman could be, is the guy who's just like Robert Williams.
Well, maybe next year. Maybe finally. You know, we had to wait 2 years for Joel Embiid to play. It can happen. So, you know, maybe then. I know we've been speculating about that all year. But it never happened. And yeah, that's next year's story. But then again, there'll be another year, you know, on the calendar for the core group. So
yeah, I mean, Steph will be 35.
They could have used them this year. Yeah. Right. Well, of course, it's not. You know, I'm not cocky, but I'm very encouraged by that performance last night. You know, so anyway.
Okay. Agree or disagree, Bob? It's not Draymond Green, but the Achilles heel for the Celtics: turnovers and not stepping up on the switch. I mean, and sometimes they've had double screens where you see Horford stepping back and Tice stepping back, and they got to get up in the shooter's face.
Yeah, well, Curry specifically, and twice that Mark Jackson cited that Al sank back too far, didn't challenge. And, you know, you'd think a guy with Al's experience would know better. I'm sure that was identified. I'm sure that Nimi would be taking a look at that. But let's remember, you're talking about Steph Curry. You can say, even if you're in his jock, he can always do a quick crossover dribble and step, create space, you know, but you don't want to leave him, give him that kind of, but it doesn't even, he doesn't have to be that wide open to hurt you. You know that. He's truly great. What I love his complete game. I love when he goes to the basket. He's got that nice little mid-range floater thing. He's got a great left hand. He's a wonderful, consummate offensive player. And he'll make the requisite pass. You know, he'll have the 31 points and all. Where did those 6 assists come from? You know, but you know, he's not selfish. He just isn't. And it's a treasure. You know, I enjoy watching him play.
You know, Jeff, I thought last night Tatum was selectively selfish at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he played a good overall game. And that's, you know, sometimes again, he's not going to blow you away and go for 40 every night. But I feel like he's just grown and matured. You know, even watching him after the game, I feel like, again, I've said this before, but his whole self-worth was on how many points he scored up until, honestly, the last few months.
Yeah.
And now I think he fully understands, because they've won without necessarily, certainly he's gotten the bulk of the share of the credit as a player, but for the most part, like, he doesn't get it every night, right? Like, he'll have a bad game, like game one, he'll have 13 assists, but he didn't shoot it well. But he comes off the court now with a huge smile. And I think most of these players have now understood, because they've lived it. Like, you can get all the points you want, but if you're 500, nobody gives a shit. But you know what? If you win over and over and over, everybody tells you how good you are. And people are paying attention to you now. And I think, not that Jason was super selfish. I never thought he was selfish. I just think, again, he thought his worth was built on how many points he scored, where now it's winning. And he's just so much more mature, the way he talks too. So much more confident, mature, all of it. Like, that's the part that, and I've said this to him this year, that honestly, again, I've known him since he was like 15. So like, to watch him mature,
right,
it's cool for me to see how he's grown as a man, right? How he now has that confidence that he had none of it. I mean, he spoke very, very minimal amount of words, not Lonzo Ball, but damn close. And now you see him up there, and I thought he gave a great answer when people asked him about being a superstar.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys saw that answer, but I thought it was really insightful of him saying, like, I never called myself a superstar. I don't know who did, but ultimately it doesn't matter. If we win, they can't say anything, but I'm a champion. That's all that matters.
No, it's good. Well, you know, these guys have to go up in public. They're 19 years old. He was 19 years old, yeah, and when he came in here. And so it's understandable that he wouldn't have the polish. Some guys are a precocious Grant Williams Exhibit A. You know, they're not. I mean, that is the extreme.
Yes.
You're not going to find, you wait another 10 years before you get another guy that walks in with the whole swag, not swagger, but the maturity and intelligence and the whole package that
Grant. Yeah, it was like talking to a grown man at 20 years old. Talking to Grant is like talking to.
But the rest of them, even if they're intelligent, you know, they have to, you know, like Jaylen Brown being an example. He was always obviously quite intelligent, you know, but he's learned how to, you know, how to act in public, if you will. And they have to learn how to act in public. I watch it with Larry, you know, and Larry was older. Larry was 22 years old when he was drafted, 23 in his rookie year. And people, you know, because he had 5 years after high school with a set transfer year. And he had to grow up in public. And the difference between Larry Bird, when he came in and he was sullen and monosyllabic and didn't want to deal with us, and the Larry Bird, who was like a raconteur by the time, you know, the 86 playoffs come. And, oh, my, you know, and he had the media in the palm of his hand, and he grew up in public. These guys have to grow up in public.
They have to get the experience. There's no doubt about it. Okay, guys, looking down the stretch here, what is the key, Bob, for the Celtics to win and the key for Golden State to win?
Well, the key for the Celtics is to just, we identified it 1,000 times, keep the turnovers down. And then otherwise, just play the way, you know, that you have now become accustomed to playing, sharing the ball. Obviously, that you don't have to talk about the defense. They know they're going to play they're going to play good defense. And try, you know, just don't let Curry go crazy, you know, And now you got to deal with Thompson too. But they, I just think just the turnover thing is crucial. It is a either or. If they don't turn it over, they're in good shape. And they didn't turn it over 12 times last night. I'll live with that. And that's fine. So that's it. Don't do it. And I think they're going to prove out to be a better team.
Yeah, I think it's don't play too cool, right? Don't relax.
Oh, no.
You know, play tougher. Be diving on the floor. Set the tone. You know, that's what you got to do. In addition, obviously, like Bob said, just play smart, right? Don't give them the ball. Don't make dumb turnovers. Don't drive into traffic. Those types of things. But I think it's just kind of keep your foot in the gas here, and don't think you have this series in control right now, because all it takes is losing the next game.
Yep, that's right.
Game four, and everything changes.
No, that's right. Treat this game four like it's a game seven, and then go from there.
Close the door. Okay, now, a couple of sidebars here I wanted to touch on with this. First was the rule with Al Horford getting the technical, the flagrant, just simply playing defense. I understand why the rule was put in place because someone got hurt, but I think it's ludicrous.
I don't have a problem with it. I've come around on this idea of landing space. And you know, you got to defend better than that. You got to defend more intelligently than that, I think. And a guy like Al Horford particularly should know that. I don't have a problem with it. I just think you got to be more intelligent about how you contest a three-pointer. You know, come on. I mean, that was amazing because that led to a seven-point possession, which is incredible, you know. But no, I'm not. We're going to agree to disagree. I once it was explained to me, I said, yeah, okay, I'll live with that.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Bob on this one. I feel like, again, you got to be smarter than that. If you've been playing a lot of basketball, to me, you just got to think more on that possession. And that's Al Horford's strength, right? That's all he does is probably overthinks. So I was surprised at that, but yeah, I'm with Bob there. I actually like the rule.
Okay. Cedric Maxwell, our colleague, said that if Draymond Green played in the 80s, he would have got knocked the bleep out. Bob, I will give you the floor. How would Draymond Green have done in the 80s?
Revisionist history. Sorry. The 80s were nowhere. Look, it wasn't that rough. There were the Pistons and everybody else, and they were actually the late 80s when Horn joined the team from Washington.
Right.
Now, come on, look at the McHale thing. I mean, no, I'm sorry. No, the league was – That league of image was the 50s and 60s and a little bit into the 70s. I'm sorry, Max. I'm not buying that. No, you guys weren't that tough. I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, like Draymond wouldn't have been the toughest dude in the league, but he's not the toughest dude in the league right now. You know, like, I don't think it would have been that different for Draymond. I really don't.
No, I don't either. I'm disputing.
Like Oakley, like there were some big dudes. Like Oakley was he was one that was feared. But how many others were there?
Ricky Mahorn and Oakley, and a little bit before that, Maurice Lucas was my standard of the 70s.
Yeah, but like there were more bigger, stronger, tougher dudes. That's what there were, right? Because the game has changed now, where now it's more long, athletic dudes, and the bigger, stronger, plotting big men. The Irvin Johnsons, the Jim McElvains, those guys aren't even in the league anymore, right?
Greg Kite, who had a role and an auxiliary role of value to the Boston Celtics. There's no role for him now,
Right. That's the difference, I think, is there's just fewer of those bigger, stronger, 7 foot, 250 pound dudes. Instead, now you've got the 6'10, 225 pound dudes that aren't, the game just isn't played in the trenches as much, period.
Oh, not at all. It's completely perimeter. Oh, no, not at all. I was so excited every time Horford got down low on mismatches and was powering himself in. I was going, yeah, that's the way to play basketball, because, nobody starts that's a broken play. Nobody initiates a post play ever now, not in this series anyway.
Okay, let's go to some other NBA news. Bob wanted to touch on it.
I don't know. I want Jeff's opinion and insight here because, you know, he's plugged in more and to what's going on.
Let's set it up here. Donovan Mitchell is
Quinn Snyder.
Yes.
Stepped aside, quote unquote. He resigned. That's what we're told. Okay. How surprised, Jeff, you have any rumbling that this was happening? And then the subplot is his relationship with Donovan Mitchell and the fallout from what's happened there, in which it was alleged that the allegations about Mitchell and Mitchell's denying him about, and he didn't, he, you know, his relationship was not good with Quinn. So what do you know about that, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, you heard rumblings that obviously this whole thing was going to fall apart, right? Whether it's Quinn Snyder being out when Danny took over and then Utah didn't do well in the playoffs again, you knew changes were going to be made. Danny's not going to sit along, especially, you know, his good friend is the owner. He's going to make changes here. And I think Quinn Snyder saw the writing on the wall here.
Okay.
It had worn him down, you know, everything from, you know, the Rudy Donovan Mitchell relationship, which was obviously awful a few years ago, and gotten better, certainly on the surface. So, yeah, I mean, the big thing here isn't Quinn Snyder at the end of the day, right? The big thing here is, what do you do if you're Danny Ainge with Donovan Mitchell, with Rudy Gobert? Do you blow this thing up? Because, you know, think about this. You know, the Knicks. So Donovan's agent is Ty Sullivan, who's at CAA. The Knicks are run by Leon Rose. Leon Rose was Ty Sullivan's boss at CAA. Mm-hmm. World Wide West was at CAA. So obviously the tea leaves are there. And I think World Wide West was front and center for one game, like mid-court, watching
conspicuous, quite conspicuous.
Right. I mean, it was ridiculous. So obviously they're going to make a run at probably Donovan Mitchell. And players are going to decide, obviously, if they want out or not. That's the way the game is played now. You know, agents just say, hey, we want to trade. We're not playing here. So if you're Danny Ainge, you got to make a coaching change now. And do you placate? And this is not Danny Ainge inherently what he does, but are you placating to Donovan Mitchell and or Rudy Gobert, probably one or the other, probably Donovan, and hiring a guy that he likes? The name that I've heard, and there are a lot of names out there right now,
Johnny Pryor,
one of which is Will Hardy with the Celtics. But a name I've heard is Alex Jensen. You know, he's a guy who played for Utah years ago in college for Majerus, has been coaching in the NBA for years, mm-hmm. has a phenomenal reputation. He turned down, I think, the Utah college job two years ago. He could have had it and turned it down because he wants to be an NBA head coach. So I could see him being the pick for Danny Ainge. But again, the coach in this situation is secondary. The big thing is, what are you going to do now? Are you going to wait until Donovan Mitchell asks out and forces his way out? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to say, you know what, let's get 75 cents in the dollar right now for Donovan Mitchell and see what we can do?
Do you regard the Jazz as underachievers in the last year or two?
No, I don't. I thought they overachieved in the regular season.
Okay.
How's that? Right. I don't. I think what they did in the playoffs was exactly what we thought they would have done had they not had great regular seasons. And to be honest, I never felt like Donovan Mitchell was going to – he's a fringe all-star. Like Jaylen Brown and Donovan Mitchell, who you I put him in a similar category, okay, which are fringe all-stars.
Okay. All right. That's a good one. I just think Quinn Snyder, I always call him Elmer Gantry. That he had that wild eye look in his eye that Burt Reynolds had, and Elmer Gantry, and the curl coming down on the forehead. I almost smile every time I look at him on the sideline. You expect that he will, I don't know, be quickly hired, but we'll see him again, won't we?
Oh yeah, yeah, he did it. Listen, again, I feel like if you look at their talent level and you look at what they did, now again, it's all built on playoffs, but what did they have? I mean, look at their Mike Conley's older. He's not the same player he's been.
No.
You had Jordan Clarkson. You have Bogdanovich, Royce O'Neal. I mean, some of the guys they had, really, their roster was underwhelming to me. Again, I thought they did exactly like if you had told me this is, and we were talking Quinn Snyder in the regular season, he's a coach of the year candidate every year. Now, again, I think they just raised the expectations higher than they probably should have been for that team going into the postseason every year.
Okay.
All right, guys.
There you go, Gary.
All right, great stuff. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, and maybe, could have some good news.
What are we at? What game six is what?
Thursday. Thursday is game six. Monday, Thursday, Sunday. That's 5, 6, 7.
We'll have to rerun Sunday. The playoff preview when we said the Celtics aren't going to win.
I'm not going to deny that I picked Milwaukee or that I didn't, and probably.
I think we need to get some good clips. Somebody from CLNS needs to get some good clips of us in.
Well, the ones would be good would be ones from January.
Yeah, those would be good.
We need some from January cut up after this thing.
We're gonna change the name of this podcast to The Experts? Gents, thank you very much.
All right, guys.
See ya.